Thanks for tuning in. Just a quick note before we get started. This show is not intended as medical or legal advice. While we do our best to research, the views expressed by the host and guests are opinions and should not be taken as fact. Our goal is to inspire hope by sharing the personal stories of autism pioneers who make exceptional contributions to the autism community.
Did you ever wonder if all families living with autism are pioneers, forging a unique and sometimes challenging journey into each simple everyday of life? Join Erica Daniels, mother of a teenager living with autism, as she explores conversations with those pioneering the unpredictable work, lives, and journeys of people making a difference for families meeting the everyday challenge of living with autism.
Hi, welcome to Hope Grows the Podcast. This is our finale episode of our first season. I am Erica Daniels, your host and mother of a young man living with autism and thriving. We're going to do something a little bit different for our season one finale. We're going to turn the tables a little bit, and I'd like to welcome our producer, Anna. Anna is one of our podcast producers and a team member at Hope Grows for Autism. Anna's going to be interviewing me. I've had such an awesome time interviewing so many really incredible professionals and parents this season. And I thought it'd be cool to bring it all together and, you know, share a little bit more about my story and Hope Grows and how we got here. So Anna, welcome, and I'm going to let you take over.
Yeah, thank you so much, Erica. Yes, my name is Anna Bertino. I've been a producer of Hope Grows the Podcast Season 1. It's been a really exciting experience. You might have heard my voice here and there doing ad reads and whatnot. And we just wanted this last episode to be really personal. I'm so happy to be sitting down with you, Erica, and put the spotlight on you, put you in the hot seat.
Awesome. I'm ready. Let's do it.
Yeah. All right. So I would love to start kind of with you. I feel like we've given others this awesome platform to share their stories, but we haven't really gotten the chance to do a deep dive into your story and Leo's story, kind of the story of your family. So share your story with us.
Sure, sure. So I am a single mom, like full single mom, you know. I have two children. My oldest is Leo. He's just turned 18. And I have a daughter, Scarlett, who is about to turn 16, which is like they're both little adults now. So that's kind of crazy. And in 2007, when I was 3 months pregnant with my second child, Leo was diagnosed with autism. And it's been a long time and things are a little bit different now, but it was a very strange experience. I have to say, sort of the first month was a little bit of a blur and kind of a shock thing. You know, this word autism, I mean, this is like kind of my number one thing. This is the core of it. This word autism has been ingrained in my brain, in my soul, for better or for worse. Sometimes I don't like the word because it's really just, it doesn't mean that much. It's just kind of a collection of different symptoms, but it doesn't really describe, you know, who the person is and who they'll become. And I think that that's really challenging. That was really challenging for me. And so the first several months, I remember waking up in the morning and this word, like the first thing I thought of, like this word autism just popped in my head. And I was kind of like, when you wake up, you're like, you know, and I'm like, okay, like, you know, this is it now. This is life. This is what we have to do. And so fairly quickly after the shock and awe wore off, I went into fix-it mode. I just dove in. My life immediately and in the next following years sort of changed and gained new purpose. And I learned everything I could. I became very self-taught, which is what you have to do in order to help your child and advocate for your child. And so I would say the first many years I spent trying to fix him, which I think is very common. There's a process that parents go through. You know, years later, I'm at a different place and, you know, I'm not trying to fix him. I'm trying to give him the best quality of life that Leo can have. And so that's been a long transition. And throughout that transition, You know, I really focused my career and professional efforts in that direction in a lot of different ways, in helping families who are living with a child with autism or someone with neurodiversity in the family. And, you know, it was one of those things where life happened, something sort of dramatic happened. And I took that moment and I stopped and I couldn't go back. I couldn't, you know, I had actually done a lot of jobs in advertising and marketing and sales and things like that. And I just couldn't go back. Something had happened. It was significant. And I needed to try to make a change for our family and for other families. And it was really a very defining moment in my life.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh my gosh. I can't even imagine, especially that journey is a roller coaster. I know we've kind of spoken about that before. What are some of the watershed moments that drove you to founding a whole nonprofit to address and support not just Leo, but kind of taking what you had learned as a parent and turning around and, you know, like, okay, I'm going to put on the nonprofit director hat now?
You know, there was some things leading up to that. And so I think the first thing was I started just working and taking different jobs and volunteer positions to help families. And I learned a lot that way. Leo in particular, and a lot of children with autism have GI issues and immune issues. And so in Leo's younger years, he was very stricken with a lot of significant gastrointestinal issues and food allergies, like really severe food allergies. We're talking anaphylaxis, we carry an EpiPen, all that kind of stuff. And so just kind of being a single mom and trying to figure out, how am I going to do this? How am I going to work and put in the hours to take care of my family, that work-life balance that most people kind of like know a little bit more now post-COVID. I've been living that life for a really long time. And so the first project I did was actually Cooking with Leo, which was an allergen-free cookbook. And so that's really where I took my first kind of step on my own into putting things down and creating a resource guide for other families. And so, you know, it's part cookbook. We come from like a really food heavy family, right? Like everything's like about meals and holidays and things like that. And so Leo was having a hard time and he wasn't able to eat the foods that his grandmother was making and different family recipes. And so the first step was really just to take those family recipes and make them healthier, allergen free, and, you know, a diet that was healthy for his GI system. The other part of it is that, you know, Leo really liked to cook. Part of it maybe was because I was in the kitchen and he just was with me all the time. So he's kind of like, there wasn't really a choice. I was trying to learn myself, like, okay, how do I shop allergen free? How do I cook allergen free? Now you go into the market and there's actually like a regulation. They have to list the allergens. At that time, there wasn't. So just learning to read labels. I mean, this was a really time intensive project that I had to embark on. And so Leo started joining me in the kitchen. And then I found like, okay, there's something he's interested in and there's something that we can connect on. And so that was really the first time him and I had any kind of joint activity connection. He, you know, had been very sort of aloof and not sort of noticing me or other people at that point in his life when he was younger. And so it turned into this really awesome project with something that I could do. Like, you know, I sort of like, I'm used to sort of making something from nothing. I'm pretty good at that. Like there was nothing like that, you know, so let's do this. So that was kind of the first step that we took into really helping other families. And then when Leo was about 11 years old, I mean, he had always had meltdowns. We'll talk about meltdowns. I'm going to talk about meltdowns a little bit. So meltdowns are a huge part of what happens with some people with autism. And it could be from not being able to communicate. It could be because someone's in pain. It could be because someone's needs something, they're misunderstood, sensory overload. You know, the thing with the meltdown is there's something wrong. They don't feel good. They can't help it. They're not misbehaving. And so Leo was having these tremendous meltdowns, yelling, screaming, crying, throwing himself down on the floor, really like on the verge of hurting himself. And I was really desperate. just really, really desperate. And so I had another child who I was also trying to take care of and keep safe. And it was, you know, at that time where, you know, now we're really far along in the medical cannabis legality across the entire country. But it was at that time, we're in Pennsylvania, medical cannabis was passed, legislation was passed, and it was coming to Pennsylvania. And so it was this weird time where we had legislation, but we didn't have any products or anything like that to buy. And so accessing those products was really challenging, and you'd have to go to another state. So our state in Pennsylvania came up with this Safe Harbor Act, which meant I had this letter, you know, if you have a child under the age of 18 and they have a qualifying medical condition, and autism was on that. So Pennsylvania was the first state to include autism as a qualifying condition with no other qualifiers. I think Delaware had something for adults.
Yeah, I didn't realize Pennsylvania was like the first state.
We're starting at the very beginning. So Pennsylvania was the first state. So there were so many unknowns. Now, I had been familiar with cannabis myself because now, of course, I know I suffer from anxiety, which I think a lot of people do. So I had used cannabis throughout college over times in my life, and I was probably self-medicating, but I didn't really know. I mean, now I know I can go and find different medicines that are specific or help specifically with that. But I had used it and I had felt comfortable with it, and I knew that there were no major side effects or anything like that. So I just decided I'm going to try it. I didn't tell anyone. And I sat in the house with Leo one day and I just gave him like this tiny little bit of cannabis. The difference in him just in that afternoon was so dramatic. And, you know, I do want to be careful. That's not how it works for everyone. And I don't want to say you're just going to try it the first time and it's going to work. There's a lot of trial and error that goes into it, but it worked enough to the point where he had calmed down. He was sitting next to me on the couch watching TV. And I know that sounds really basic, okay? But anyone who has a child with autism knows that that's not how it goes. I mean, the child is usually bopping around. You're keeping them away from different things or trying to keep them safe. And so I knew that I was onto something, but I was honestly afraid because, you know, I could still sort of get in trouble for crossing state lines and different things. And so at that point, you know, I knew that it worked. I kept going with Leo. You know, I really felt that I was onto something. And so I proceeded slowly with caution, you know, in sharing the information with other families. And so soon it just kind of spread as word of mouth, and we became this network of maybe five or six families. Then we were different parents were taking turns going to California, Colorado, bringing back medicine for our kids. It grew from there. I mean, the need, people just kept reaching out. And, you know, I can't turn someone away. You know, I know what it's like to be in that situation. And now I know what it's like to be on the other side of that. And so if I can help someone and help them make a change for their family, you know, that's something that I need to do and I want to do. And so that's how Hope Grows for Autism started. We've since grown across the US, and we do have a chapter in other, you know, in Australia. We've grown quite a bit. Our resources, you know, have grown, and I'm really happy about that decision to do that and how that's going and how that's helping other families today.
Yeah, I think it's so important. And I know how challenging, you know, we've had conversations, you know, behind the scenes about kind of how challenging it can be to be both a parent and in this nonprofit world. What is it like to run a nonprofit like Hope? What are some of the highs and the lows, the day-to-day, kind of behind the scenes moments?
Yeah. So it's really interesting to run a nonprofit surrounding cannabis, okay? Because nonprofit status is typically, it's a federal thing. And federally, we're still at a, you know, cannabis is still illegal federally. So it's the same challenges that cannabis companies have. We're not touching any products. We have no hands-on whatsoever with cannabis. We're educating and connecting parents with resources. But even so, just because we're in that, and you know this from working with us, just because we're in that cannabis space and we're talking about it, we have to be really careful how we say it and what we say. In the beginning, we had a ton of interest from and support from the local businesses that were coming to Pennsylvania, and everyone was really excited about helping families and helping patients. It's been since, you know, maybe 2017, we're looking at 6 years of industry, at least here in Pennsylvania. And so there's been, of course, a transition where now a lot of the cannabis industry is focused on adult use, total legalization for adults. And I support that. I'm behind that, but that's not the focus of my work or our work at Hope Grows. And so that's unfortunately clouds the attention that the patients get. And then when you break it down further, the attention that pediatric patients get. And so we've had to sort of shift and find partners that are more unique and are really still focused on patients and in the kind of transition of the industry, so to speak.
Yeah. I think there's been a theme kind of as we've been talking about, a rapid change over the past, even just a few years. You know, we spoke about the change in when you go to the grocery store, you know, allergens are more clearly labeled now. The cannabis industry more specifically has changed so much, even in just the past few years. I can't even imagine, you know, what it's like to be in a position where it's kind of your job to educate people. And you have to stay up to date with all these different moving parts. And just, I admire it so much.
Yeah, there's a lot of moving parts in terms of, you know, legislations there. Like I said, when I first started this, it was just Pennsylvania. And so now I think we're up to, you know, around 20 states. I think it's 23 that you can access cannabis with an autism diagnosis, whether that be straight autism as a qualifying condition in your state, or that be the flexibility of the physician to sort of designate, or different comorbid conditions that go along with autism. And so we've really come a very long way. And yeah, it's exciting. I mean, things are moving and changing all the time. You know, do I wish that we could just get medicine for people who need it more easily? Of course. But, you know, I'm used to working. I have to work within the system that we have. That's just how it is. And so we do that.
Trulieve believes in providing leading information backed by experts, as well as a model for compassionate care, the foundation of the medical marijuana mission, and are committed to educating not only patients and the public, but also physicians. Trulieve partners with qualified physicians across all of our states to supply education, resources, and industry insight to empower the patient base. Through these partnerships, we are moving the industry forward and ensuring patients have access to high quality, safe, and reliable medicine.
What is one thing that you wish people, parents, or just folks at large knew about autism and medical cannabinoids?
I wish that folks knew that cannabis is very safe and benign. When we first started Hope Grows, we were active in getting a lot of research facilitated and accomplished. There's a lot of research. The research is there, that it's safe, that it's effective. But for some reason, there's this brainwashing that happened with the war on drugs that this generation, my generation, is very stuck on. And so I really wish people would know how much safer and feel comfortable with how much safer cannabis is than some of the pharmaceuticals that are widely prescribed to very young children. It's so crazy. Like, people, doctors and professionals and parents, you know, they read it and they're still brainwashed. They can't, you know, it's like someone sees something, they read the study, it's there, but they still pause. They still won't do it. I really loved one of our guests that we've had a couple of times is Dr. Flashman. I really love Dr. Flashman's take on how he uses cannabis. When he evaluates a young child for autism to determine whether they have that diagnosis or not, the first thing he does thereafter is prescribe them, he can prescribe because he's in Israel. So that's a word we can't use in the US, but he prescribes, recommends medical cannabis, whether it be CBD, you know, some kind of mixture of THC and CBD or different cannabinoids, because his philosophy is that the brain is stuck and rigid. You know, it's a different philosophy than like the educational philosophy of like, let's treat these kids like they're having behaviors and let's get rid of these negative behaviors, which is not the right way to approach. I mean, it's part of it, but it's not the whole picture, right? And so I really wish that people would see how safe it is and try it before they try other things. Because really, if you give it a try, you can unlock that rigidity. Then the child is open to the different educational therapies that are available, you know. But when you're knocking on the door and the door's locked, you're wasting time, energy, resources, and these families are just spinning. So I really wish that people would believe the truth, which is that medical cannabis is safe and effective, and it could help a tremendous amount of people in the neurodiversity and autistic community.
Yeah. So you said that the neurodiversity and autism community, you know, it's not just autism that can benefit from these medicines. Like, so the other podcast too, it's not, you know, just cannabinoid medicines. I think we had an episode that was great about psychedelics too, and how those tie in to autism and neurodiversity.
Autism and neurodiversity is just incredibly on the rise. The CDC is telling us now we have 1 in 33 children who are on the autism spectrum. Now, those numbers are barreling at high speeds. And so what we really need to do is think about innovative, novel ways to help people who are on the autism spectrum and people who are neurodiverse. And so I think what we've been doing for so many years is just very old school behavioral therapy. You know, what happens now when a child gets diagnosed with autism, they get referred to a behavioral company and then they start behavioral therapy. And that's all really important and great, but that's not going to solve the problem. You know, the problem is that there haven't been any innovative, novel solutions. And I'm not sure why, you know, maybe it's just too challenging, but people working in this field to come up with things and different approaches other than pharmaceuticals or behavioral therapy are fewer than I'd like them to be. There's this huge challenge with the enormous influx of children and even children that can't get a diagnosis. And so the medical community, the scientific community, the parent community, we really need to come together and find different ways, different solutions than we've been doing in the past, because what we've been doing is not working. And so what are we looking at? We're looking at a trajectory of, who knows, in 10, 15 years, half of American children being on the autism spectrum, and we're just doing the same old thing that we were doing for the last 50 years. You know, I really think that innovation is really important here. And things like cannabis, things like psychedelics, things, again, that people are afraid of because of the war on drugs. Let me tell you what I'm afraid of. I'm afraid of pharmaceuticals. Okay. It's not to say I'm not going to use them, and we haven't used them and we can't use them in combination, but these are drugs that have really significant black box side effects that we're giving to children. I think that we need to stop and pause and think about what we're doing there. What are we doing? My take would be, let's wait till they're 18 before we look at pharmaceuticals and look at more natural things like cannabis or psychedelics. Before that, I also think, you know, the next piece of it is the families. Autism is a family thing. It's not just the child or the person. And so we need to keep the family healthy. that would include, you know, taking a look. A lot of parents use cannabis for their children and then end up learning about it and using it for themselves. There's research out there that tells us that mothers of children with autism have stress levels similar to combat soldiers, their cortisol levels, it's PTSD. And so that's real, that's going on. The whole family needs to have new and different solutions than we've been doing. And so I'm really passionate about that. I'm really excited we've gotten to talk to a lot of people who are working in those spaces. And I really hope that more people join in as well in the future.
Yeah, we've been so lucky, I think, to have amazing, diverse guests on the podcast this season. You know, a parent like you who turned to activism to make a difference, a physician, pediatrician, everyone in between. I think it's important to note here the support of businesses like Trulieve, like Realm of Caring, and LeapWell, and the Apothecarium, who sponsor the podcast and Hope Grows for Autism at large to kind of help raise the awareness for medical cannabis interventions for autism. Reflecting on this season of podcast episodes, what are some things you've learned from your guests?
Well, I have learned so much from my guests. I've learned that there are people out there that are really working hard to help our families. I've learned that there's physicians like Dr. Goldstein and Dr. Flashman who just get up in the morning and then intrinsically want to help these families. And Dr. Ross, who wants to help her families and wants to learn more. There's all different levels. I've learned that there are cannabis industry and biopharmaceutical industry people who are really working very hard to help our families. Trulieve, who sponsored the podcast, that was a really awesome thing that they did, you know, to be able to put this information out there and give us a chance to share with our listeners what's happening and what's going on. I think Zalera Therapeutics is, you know, they do an awesome job of working with us and supporting us too in their plans to launch the Hope medicines and clinical trials through the FDA are a huge win for the autism community because, look, we have sort of a balance. We're sort of in between like the cannabis industry and patients going and getting their medicines from dispensaries and also the future of, is someone going to be able to go into their doctor's office and get a prescription for medical cannabis? And so, you know, we've learned that there are people working all along the route of what needs to happen for patients to access medicine. And so I'm really thrilled that I got the chance to highlight those people and share with everyone kind of what's going on. I think the Realm of Caring also has been doing incredible work, and they've been really great about helping families and actually giving us a partnership at Hope Grows so that families can actually call in and get real-time help. And their newer nonprofit, Unlimited Sciences, where they are studying psychedelics and they are helping caregivers, you know, at least right now, be able to learn more about how they might be able to use that for their symptoms of anxiety and PTSD.
Yeah. Behind the scenes editing for me has also been really experience. On the other side of that coin, what is one thing that you hope someone walks away with after listening to an episode of Hope Grows, the podcast?
I guess the one thing I hope people walk away with is hope, right? Hope for new treatments for symptoms, hope for a better quality of life for families, hope that we'll see a change in the way we treat and support these families, and mostly just hope for the families that everything will be okay and that there are resources and there are things out there. And it's unfortunate they have to look a little deeper and a little harder, but maybe we can help them by bringing the information to them. Really, everything we do is about hope. And, you know, I always like to end my podcast with like the question, what does hope mean to you? And so what it means to me is hope for a better life, a better quality of life, and happiness for these families. You know, I've seen it in my own transition now that my son is 18 and we've been through all of the stages of childhood, right? And in the beginning, it was a lot of panic and worry. And then once I started getting into the work, you know, it was very therapeutic for me. And I hope other people find that for themselves in terms of whether they volunteer or they participate in different community activities to just try to make something better out of something that at first might seem scary, right? And so we're at a place now, you know, we went from, oh my God, autism diagnosis, end of the world, what does that mean? To, wow, you know, my life is deeper, richer, more satisfying, not without challenges. You know, you can't have the good without the bad in life, but really at a place where different can be beautiful and it doesn't have to be wrong. Just because society expects one thing, it doesn't mean, I mean, my son has such a tremendous happiness and quality of life about him that it's just incredible. And I hope that other families get to experience that as well. And they get to make that transition through acceptance and seeing the good things and the beautiful things and the different things that being a family living with autism can bring.
I love that. I love that so much. As we're kind of wrapping up, I would love if you could kind of give us a look ahead, maybe. We spoke about how we're at this sort of a turning point in the story, in the journey of medical cannabis. Where do you think America, the world at large, if you'd like to go that broad, but America specifically, because that's where we are. Where do you think America stands today in terms of legislative equity and access? And what do you hope the future holds?
I hope the future holds access for anyone who needs it to medical cannabis medicine. It's something that we should have the right to try or use. I think that unfortunately it's more about politics and business than it is about patients from the top desk down. That's the way the world works. And that's unfortunate. So I'm not going to pretend that that doesn't exist and it's going to be utopian. And so I hope that we can find a way to work within that where there's options, there's choices, where companies like Zalira are able to get medicines on the market through the FDA and patients can go into their doctor's office and get a prescription. And then I hope that there's also the option for patients to have more of an over-the-counter experience, you know, just like our other medications. You can buy allergy medicine from behind the counter or you can buy it on the shelf. I hope that, you know, dispensaries like Apothecarium and Trulieve will continue to keep a place for autism patients and keep products for autism patients and support them. And I hope that more dispensaries do that and more manufacturers make that. You know, I really hope that we have options and that when parents go into an appointment and, you know, they don't want to try really like a SSRI or an antipsychotic, which why would you, you know, for a young child, that physicians are more open and they feel more comfortable and they're able to say, okay, well, there's this one that we can prescribe you or you can try something, you know, over the counter. And I really hope that there's just access. There's more access and it just becomes normalized. And we get away from this idea that we have to treat these children like they're doing something wrong, they're behaving wrong, and we need to behavior that out of them. Giving them medical cannabis and giving them access to it is a much softer way to give them support and open up their brains to participate in the world in a more meaningful way. And so for Hope Grows, that's what I'm hoping for.
Well, thank you so much. I am filled with hope.
Oh, good. Good.
I just want to say thank you for allowing me to put you in the hot seat today. I had a great time. I always come away from our conversations learning something new, no matter how smaller, in what capacity that might be. I think your work is so important. And I just want to shout out the tenacity and the strength and really the sacrifices you're making for the sake of others. I hope everybody listens to this podcast. I know they know that, but I hope we all kind of walk away feeling some of that energy, some of that inspiration.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that. And I appreciate your hard work and your dedication to our podcast and your, honestly, your expertise. I mean, there's not a lot of people that have this kind of expertise to work in this space. And so I appreciate that. It's been a pleasure. You made the hot seat not very hot. So I appreciate that. And I look forward to, you know, what's to come in season two of Hope Grows the podcast. I know we'll start working on that soon and we'll keep everybody posted about what's up next.
Yeah, this isn't goodbye. This is see you later.
See you later.